Pubcast.
So, Gina, that night turned into a night of light and love. It was probably, you're going to hear the one of the most profound NDEs ever. I remember every single part of the NDE. I remember distinctly how I left my body in this NDE.
Welcome to the Liberated Healer Podcast, where we touch on a variety of topics in the world of spirituality, energetic healing, and everything in between and beyond. Take an adventure on a shooting star with your host, Gina, and offering their wisdom, guidance, and everlasting love and support.
Hello, everybody. This is Gina Cavalier. I am the host of the Liberated Healer Podcast. Today, we have Bill Tortorella on, and I listened to his story on a couple other podcasts about his near-death experience that blew me away. I actually have listened to it a couple times. I got tears each time, so I asked him to be on, and he so graciously said yes, and I'm excited to meet him, be in his energy, and hear his story about his near-death experience to inspire others to understand that we are these vast, beautiful beings, and we have a purpose. So welcome, Bill, to the show. Thank you for being here.
Well, hi, Gina. Nice to meet you, and thanks for having me on.
Well, let's get started. Tell us, how did this come about?
Well, I'll tell you a little quick scenario up front about myself. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, born and raised there. And when I grew up, my mom and dad had a bar and grill across from Ebbets Field where the Brooklyn Dodgers used to play. So I had some exciting times when I was a young, young boy. And my dad was president of a Teamsters Union local for the United Parcel. He was the president of United Parcel and the Teamsters. And it was an interesting life growing up. That took me into the art field. I loved art growing up. So I was always painting and drawing. And I wound up going to the School of Art and Design and graduating from Art and Design. And I did an amazing thing came up. My brother had passed away, my older brother. My brother was as closer to me than my father was always on business trips and he was always traveling. And my brother Peter was the one that took me places. He was 15 years older than me, my brother. He took me places. He taught me how to play ball. He took me to the park. He took me to the circus. We went to Coney Island. You know, he's the one that was there all the time for me. And when I was 15 years old, he had to go into the hospital and they told him he had 4 months to live. Here he's only 30 years old. He's been working since he's 16. And that devastated me, just completely devastated me. And I got real close to Jesus. I grew up Roman Catholic. I would say right now I'm more Christian in my life. But I believe in a lot of different things, especially after my near-death experience. But that was a profound experience for me. And what happened on the last term in my school year, we had a project to do. So I picked the storyboard concept up of doing Jesus's life. So I depicted Jesus's life from the birth in the manger up into the crucifixion on 17 different panels. So if anybody knows, in the old days in advertising, you used to do what they call storyboards to make movies and commercials up and things like that. So I did 17 paintings on these panels, 10-inch by 30-inch long. And I submitted them to my teacher at the time, Mr. Hollingsworth. I used to call him Dr. Hollingsworth. And he was a fantastic teacher. He was wonderful. And I happened to do very well with it. I won the contest for the school and I did fine. And he said, "What was your inspiration?" I said, "Well, what could be better than the best story ever told?" You know, so he loved it. They displayed it on Second Avenue in New York. It was very nice having that. I'll show you how things run together in sequence. My brother had died the year before that. And when I was about 16 or just about 16. And after school got finished and I graduated, I'm riding in the city one day, and over the NBC, yeah, it was NBC Radio. NBC Radio comes an announcement that they have the new Andrew Lloyd Webber play, Jesus Christ Superstar, coming out. So they said it was going to be a big contest for the whole country, if not the whole world. The contest wound up having 250,000 contestants. And that home, I went home that night, my head was racing. I couldn't, you know, I just finished the storyboard. So I knew what I was going to do. And I saw Jesus standing 7 feet tall. I went to the lumber yard the next morning. I got 2 plywood boards, 4x8 sheets with 3 sets of hinges. I put it together as a card because it was supposed to be a combination card for the show and for the anniversary of WNBC radio and television for their birthday, their 50th anniversary it was. And I was so excited to get started. I got started on that. So I pictured Christ standing 7 foot tall, the burning mountain in the background with thousands of people, little people on top, walking with torches all the way down to the bottom where they were about 3 or 4 feet. And Jesus's hands were spread out in love and they were all reaching up to him with their canes and torches and everything. And when I brought that into NBC, they had a big ballroom. And they told me, the lady grabbed me and she says, you got to put this card right in the middle of the room. So there was cards all scattered all around, all different sizes of things and paintings and pictures, you know, just flat pictures of watercolors and things like that. And I stand the card up. Now, this is in, I think, July or yeah, it was in July because the play didn't open till October. In mid September, I get a call, said, Bill Tortorella? I said, yes, this is Bill Tortorella. I said, you have just won the WNBC radio and television card contest for the Andrew Lloyd Webber play, Jesus Christ Superstar. And I thought somebody was playing a joke on me, like one of my friends, because I told them all about it, what I did, and it was real. But so I won it. It was so interesting. But that just happened the way I felt. So close to Jesus after my brother died, you know, praying and everything. I was praying for him to live, but he passed and it was his time, I guess, you know. He had liver cancer from nowhere. It just happened and 4 months later he was dead. And, you know, and also he died a terrible death. So those things happen. Now I'll take you up to the actual NDE and near-death experience.
Yeah.
As the years go by, it's now, I am 42 years old. It's 1994. I'm out in Tucson, Arizona. I'm doing about 35 to maybe 38 trade shows a year all around the country. So all the major cities I covered. If I went out to California, I usually started, our show circuit was the International Gem and Jewelry Show Circuit. So I usually started with San Diego. Then I'd move up to Los Angeles and Santa Monica and do a show at the Civic Center there. Then there was the final show while I was out there. It was in San Mateo up by San Francisco. And it was that January. In February of 94 was the big Tucson show. In Tucson, Arizona. Now, this is hard to believe for some people, but they still have the show going on today so they could check it out. In Tucson, Arizona, they have the biggest gem and mineral show in the world. And it actually attracts, it goes on for almost 2 weeks. And it attracts, I believe, millions of people. Because not only the convention center is filled with people, but every ballroom in the city is completely filled with vendors. Convention center now, every ballroom, even the hotel rooms have vendors in them where they work and open for the day. And I'm into the show now about 3 days. We're doing really good. I have 3 people working with me down there. And people are, it's the time of year. Flu season is running around. Colds are running around. But now don't forget, we got people from all over the world coming in. People from South America, Asia, Canada, Europe, all over the world. People were coming from. And every year you got that, you know, little coughs going on, but people are getting deathly ill on this one. The lady across from me in a booth, she was working her booth for the first 3 days. And on the third day, I think it was in the afternoon, she just fell to the floor and collapsed. And I had been a paramedic after I left New York City, moved out to Florida. I had to change my field, so I became a paramedic for Dade and Broward County. And those skills kicked right back in. And I ran over to her when she hit the floor. And I tried to, you know, put her in a good position, make sure her airway was open, make sure she was breathing properly. So I was still fine up until the next morning. The next morning when I woke up on that fourth day, my whole throat was swollen. It felt like I had very little airway to breathe. I started running this massively high fever. And I still felt like I had to get into work. So I tried to cool myself down a little bit. I took a whole bunch of aspirin and everything, and Tylenol at the time. And I got into work, and my coworkers looked at me. They took one look at me. They said, Bill, you got to go to the hospital or go to a clinic or something. So I got down to the hospital, and the hospital was filled with people. It had a lot of people in it. And they said the wait was going to be terribly long. So they asked us if we could go to different, and I think they shuttled us off, if I remember. I think they asked us we could go to different medical centers around town they had set up because they were seeing so many people for this. They didn't know if it was viral. They didn't know if it was a virus, a flu, or if it was bacterial. They had no idea. But they took a look at me when I got to this medical center. They put me right on a gurney. They said, your levels are messed up and everything. Your oxygen level is very, very low. And I knew that was happening to me because it was hard for me to get my breath. And they hooked me up with IVs right away. And they started giving me antibiotics through the terminal and the IV. And I think I went through about 2 full bags. I was there several hours. I'm not exactly sure how many hours, but I remember going through 2 to possibly 3 bags of IV drip. And they came over and put in every bag, they put antibiotic in and more antibiotic in because they thought they were fighting possibly a bad bacterial thing also. Yeah. So they wasn't sure on that. So after they got my oxygen levels back up, they got my fever down. I should say they got my fever down for a while. It was down. They said to me, you know, the medical center's closed in the evening. So they said to me, go back to your hotel. They gave me a bottle of antibiotics in pill form, and they gave me an inhaler to help me breathe. They said, use this tonight. They said, don't take another antibiotic till about 10 o'clock. Right now it's real late. It's early evening already. They say, but take an antibiotic around 10 o'clock before you go to bed. And in the morning, if you still feel this way, they said, get yourself right into the hospital. So, Gina, that night turned into a night of light and love. It was probably, they're going to hear one of the most profound NDEs ever. I remember every single part of the NDE. I remember distinctly how I left my body in this NDE. So I fell off after I took my antibiotic. I finally fell off to sleep because it was hard going to sleep for a while. But when I fell off, I physically remember and physically seen myself. I must have took my last breath and I seen myself leave my body through my eyes. You know, they say the eyes are the windows of the soul. And it might be my pineal gland that I left through, but it was so close to my eyes, I thought I was leaving through my eyes. But I left my body in this beautiful, glowing mist. It was the color of life itself. I mean, the color, if you take a green and soak it in the summer, in the spring sun, up in the Northeast here, on this side of the country, if you're up in the mountains, you know what that is. It's a brilliant green. Well, my whole spirit was that color. My whole being was that color. Now I'm in I'm in this beautiful flowing mist of this brilliant color green. That was the color of life. And I could tell you, if you magnified it 100 times, it wouldn't have been enough. It was glowing like you would have a beautiful glowing green neon sign. It was even brighter than that. It was amazing. So now I'm hovering above the body at this time, recognizing it's still my body. And I'm just hovering around the room, but I'm feeling this strange feeling. I'm getting a heavy, wonderful feeling of this love just taking my whole being over, my whole spirit over. And it's amazing because I feel this love getting stronger and stronger. Mm. And I believe that once we realize the body is completely dead, the minute I said to myself that body has no more life left into it, that's when everything lit up from behind. It lit up like a beam of light coming right under me from my back, and it turned me. Now, I remember turning. The light physically turned me itself, and this magnificent gateway opened. This gateway was beautiful. It was made up of amazing colors, and it drew me right into this magnificent tunnel of color. And the colors were whizzing by and in circular motions. And I'm in the tunnel now. And now I start to move. And I'm moving faster and faster and faster. And the faster I move, the more love I'm feeling. But I'm feeling cradled. I'm feeling cradled by this light. It was that beautiful. I'm feeling this love inside me, and it's growing and growing and growing. And I'm moving. It feels like I'm moving at the speed of light, but not feeling a thing, but seeing the colors going by me and whizzing through me so fast. And we're traveling for a while. I'm feeling like I'm traveling through the cosmos. And now we arrive, which I'll call heaven, because I believe in heaven. I believe in God. And I'll never forget this, because these were the first words I'm going to say out of my mouth, but I was in complete spirit form at this time, in this beautiful mist. And I said out loud, I heard myself clearly say out loud, and it was so clear, it was brilliant. I said, I'm home. I'm finally home. Thank God I'm home. And then I repeated it over and over. And on the third time I said it, Gina, on the third time I said it, I hear this soft voice, yes, Bill, you're home in the light of God. And there was a presence. There was presence of the spirits all around me. There were family and friends. And the communication was so clear. It was unbelievable. Telepathy. You could look at these spirits and talk to each other. And it was like we use probably 6-7%. I don't even know if we use 7% of our mind here on earth. But I think when you're in heaven, I think you get to use 100% of your being. And it's pure love you're feeling over there now. So I'm in this complete bliss. I'm feeling close to family and friends. I'm communicating, and they're communicating with me. And it's wonderful. And Antonia says, I am the one that brought you back home. And I said, you brought me back home. I didn't even realize anybody was with me in the tunnel. And that must have been the feeling I had of being cradled, because I felt that I was protected. I felt nothing but loved and protected during that time coming back. I felt a completeness of protection. And it was her. It was Antonia.
Who's Antonia?
Huh?
Who is Antonia to you?
Antonia was one of my guides. She announced herself as one of my three guides that I have. She told me, Bill, I'm Antonia, and I'm one of your three guides. And I started to ask her questions. She says, Bill, you have two other guides. And as soon as she said, you have two other guides, I hear a voice. And I see this spirit approaching me. First, I see the spirit, and I start to feel the spirit. And then he talks and says, "Hello, Billy." Once he said, "Hello, Billy," I almost melted inside because that was my brother's voice. Mm-hmm. I felt it within me. We embraced. It was feeling nothing but love. The light, the spirits come together. It's not like here. You come together. The love is so beautiful and grand. And I asked Peter, "How are you?" And he said to me, "Bill." And he said, when he said Billy, he never called me Bill before. But when he said Billy, it's, "I'm going to take you for something called a life review now. It's time for your life review." I had no idea what that was. I never even heard of a near-death experience. I was a business person. I had, you know, no idea where I was. All I knew is I was in love and bliss at the same time. And he whisked me off, and we're in this beautiful illuminated place. And I figured it out right away, because this was the place where they show you all the good you've ever done in your life and all the bad you've ever done in your life. And it started out wonderful. It started out with pictures of me as a boy. And this is the first time, Gina, this is the first time I see myself back in my body. I'm not in physical body, don't forget. But they're showing me in a picture of myself in my physical body. I'm feeling like I'm in my physical body now. Because when I'm looking, I'm seeing Peter stand beside me. Now there's clips going by faster and faster of things I've done in my lifetime. Good things I've done. Even from when I was a little boy with my friends and stuff. There was times that, you know, my mom, she did okay. She had the bar and grill across the street from Ebbets Field, where the Brooklyn Dodgers used to play, and she used to give me some money sometimes. I used to take all my friends to the movies. We'd have a blast. We'd have a good time. Or we'd go to Coney Island and, you know, ride the rides. It was such a great upbringing in New York. So they're showing me the good I've done all along. They got to the point when I moved down to Florida, they got to the point and stopped when I was a paramedic. And the next thing you know, because that's what I became a paramedic after there was no advertising agencies in 1973 in Miami. The fella at the Miami Herald told me if I wanted to be in the advertising commercial art business, I'd have to go back to New York or Chicago. And I refused to do that. So I didn't want to do that at all. So I became a paramedic for Dade and Broward County. And now we're in our unit. Danny and I, we picked up our unit one morning, got it ready. We're heading up to our station in North Miami Beach, and we're on I-95. Now, our station's on 125th Street. All of a sudden, at about 79th Street, the radio goes off. There's a 317. A 317 meant emergency accident. Now, the 317, there's a 317, they said it's on 135th Street, northbound on I-95. So I'm looking at Danny, he's looking at me, and we're saying there's less than a 2-minute ETA. But by the time I picked up the mic and told them to call off the other unit, because our station was still another 10-minute ride away, they had a 10-minute ride to get there. We were right there. Now we're about a minute away from the accident itself. We pull up, arrive at the accident. I see this young boy running around frantically. He's crying. He's frantic. I see scrapes on his face. I jumped out of the unit with my medic bag. Danny jumps out. We're both running towards the young boy, and he sits on the floor, and he's pointing. He goes like that. And me and Danny both look over together like that at the same time, and his sister's head is through the window. It's massive. It's a bad accident. Her physical head was halfway through the window, so half of it was inside the car, half of it was outside the car. And the windshield was lodged up into her skull. But when we got there, she still was breathing. She still had a pulse. She was totally unconscious when we got there. Danny looked at me. I looked at him. We had to make an immediate assessment on her, because if we would have left her there when this head trauma like that, the head bleeds so badly, she would have bled to death. There was blood over everything. So I said to Danny, I'll go outside. You can stay inside the car with her, and I'll try to ease the top of her head through. So I did that. And now at this point, I got a handful of gauze pads in my hand. We're racing her back into the unit, holding the top of her head down. Danny jumps in the front. The young brother jumps in the back with me. This girl couldn't have been more than 17, 18 years old, too. She was a young girl. And I'm holding the top of her head down. She's completely unconscious at this time. And now we're in the unit. Danny kicks it in gear, and we're on our way to Parkway General Hospital, which is only about 30 blocks from there, from where we were. It's on 167th Street in North Miami Beach. And we're flying. And all of a sudden, in the unit, she starts seizing. Her body's jumping up and down. And I got her head in my hand. I'm cradling her neck underneath with my bottom hand. And my top hand is holding the top of her head down. And like I said, the head bleeds so bad. So you couldn't see how bad it was, because all the fatty tissues under the skin and everything. But it was bad. We got to the hospital. Everybody was waiting there. They knew the call was coming in. So they whisked her right off into the operating room. I took one look at Danny. I said, Danny, you're full of blood. He looked at me. He said, Bill, we got to head to the station immediately, get a change of clothes. We were on a 24-hour shift, so we were working for the next 24 hours. But that was some tough way to start the day off. So that's where we left her. All day long, all I could do was think about that. It was just on my mind. My mind was twirling, going around. I'm thinking about that even after we're picking up, you know, routine calls and things like that. I was thinking about her during the day. Well, that evening, I didn't sleep too good. And my partners in the station were saying, Bill, stop bringing your work home with you. She's dead. She's not alive. It's impossible for her to be alive because she lost so much blood. And Danny was thinking the same thing. And he told me, he said, you know better, Bill. You know, with that much blood loss, she cannot possibly be alive. I said to him, Danny, I woke him up an hour early because it was out of our way to go back to Parkway before we brought our unit back in. I said, I got to go. He said, you got to go where? I said, I got to go back to Parkway. I have to find out what happened to that girl we brought in yesterday. And he told me, Billy, she's not here anymore. She's gone. I said, Danny, I got to go. And he looked at me and he just said, okay, we'll go. And then, so we took off early. We went over the Parkway General, got to the emergency room. I knew a lot of the nurses in the emergency room. They said, they were all smiling for some reason when we came in. I said to one of the nurses, I think her name was Becky, I said, what happened to that girl we brought in yesterday? She walks right up to me, Becky, and she says, you want to meet her? With a big smile on her face. I said, are you serious? She's alive? I said, the hair of my arms was standing up, Gina. The hair of my arms was standing up. I was so thrilled. She brought us right up to her room, and she was sitting up in her bed, eating Jell-O, with a turban wrapped around her head, this high above her head. It was amazing. And she didn't know who we were because she was unconscious. She had a seizure during that time in the ambulance. During that time in the ambulance, on the way to the hospital, her body seized on me while I was holding her neck. I called out for God's help. When I called out for God's help in the ambulance, I was talking to her young brother. I called out, God, help me. And I saw Peter's hand come in on her head in that moment. Peter's hand was with my hand on her head. She did lose that much blood. She should have been dead, but that was miraculous what happened. When I saw Peter's hand, don't forget, we're in our life review. That's when I saw Peter's hand, not when it actually happened to me. But we brought her up to the room. Her young brother just popped up, his eyes open, because he was asleep on the chair. Her young brother popped his eyes open. He says to her, this is the guy that saves your life. And he points to me. And I was just ecstatic. I mean, it was a wonderful feeling. So those good things. So the good was over and over. And it was just wonderful. But then they turned it around on me. And then they start showing me the bad things I've done. So, you know, as we grow up, we all do stupid things. Bad things, too. Not that bad, thank God. I always say, thank God I didn't do nothing that bad in my life. But I did, you know, there was people I hurt in my life and things like that. The part about the bad side is a little different. It's not as joyous as the good side because you're feeling nothing but wonderful love. But the bad side, you feel other people's pain. Mm-hmm. You become their pain. It's that real. So you here you are. When I was young and dumb, I had left my first wife with my young child, 2 years old. And being all selfish at that age, that would never even cross my mind. But at that time, I didn't think that kind of hurt was there. But I became their physical pain. I felt it inside. I felt every bit of it. And I remember they showed me that, and it was so bad and so hard on me. And they showed me a few other things. It got so bad, I started screaming, help me. Help me. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Please forgive me.
Yeah.
God, forgive me. And as soon as I said, God, forgive me, everything came down. All that grayness came down. I was back in spirit form again. And now Antonia's standing there, Peter's standing there, and they're these beautiful glowing beams. And Antonia says to me, Bill, look at yourself. And remember I told you I was floating around this little mist? Well, now I look down at myself. I'm this magnificent beam of light. I am exactly like they are. I'm a beautiful beam, just like the other spirits were, and angels, colors. And it was just beautiful. And the beauty about that feeling was I felt I was accepted then. I was really home. I was in heaven. I'm home. I'm happy.
Oh, man.
And then.
Beautiful. You know, I think I shared with you that I wrote a book about healing my suicidal ideation. But when you said I'm home, you know, that always got me, because I think that when I was struggling, like I kind of knew that there was this beautiful place and I just wanted to fast track to the beautiful place. Really? You know, right. I honestly felt like I couldn't get through all the hard things. But now I know I can get through all the hard things.
You can.
But I do honestly feel like, exactly understand that without having had a complete NDA like you, NDE like you have.
Right.
But when you say,
I know, some people feel they can escape sometimes their problem, but you know what? That one thing we can't do. That's one of the things they don't want you to do, because you're on a path, you're on a life path, and you cannot interfere with your life path. You don't know what your outcome could bring. Mm-hmm. It could bring so much good to the world. You know, so that's the main reason why we don't, and we're not basically allowed. When it's terribly wrong to take someone's life. So
you'll have to go through it at some point.
We'll get to that part. I'll explain that part in the next part here.
All right, let's go to the next part.
The next part is then Peter says, I want to announce somebody that's been with you your whole life. And Antoni already told me I had three guardians, so this was a third one. And Peter said he welcomed Oren. And Oren, as soon as he came, it felt to me like maybe 20 feet or so. But as soon as he came by me, I knew who he was. I knew he was with me. Peter said along the way he was coming in, Oren was coming in. And Peter's saying, he's been with you your whole life. Oren was my intuition. He was the angel that's been with me my whole life. We have angels that are with us all the time. And they're sort of the ones that lead you in the right direction, on the right path. That's why if you have a very strong, strong intuition, you have to stay on that path. I know a lot of us don't. I haven't, you know, a lot of times myself, and wound up going down the wrong side of the road, but then you have to straighten that out and correct it. So, but when you have a strong intuition, you have to really be there with that intuition and stick to the right thing to do. Oren was the one that was with me my whole life when my friends were getting in trouble, when they were turning into heroin addicts. I said, I had something telling me. I always talk about him. He's on my shoulder talking in my ear. Don't do that, Billy. Don't do that. Stay away from that stuff. Stay away from that stuff. And I listened. So I listened heavily into my intuition. And it's a good thing I did, because it kept me out of, you know, major problems. Because, you know, drugs like heroin and stuff like that could only bring it down to three places. Either jail, death, or a mental institution for the rest of your life, you know? So that's
good reminder for people, especially when you're lost or depressed, to remember that you have this soul tribe. And you kind of get these little knocks and you don't know where they're coming from. And you kind of talk yourself out of them. But they're really there, you know, and they're like, no, don't go down that road. Don't go down. Don't repeat this pattern. And then
they tell you everybody has them.
Yeah.
So they just don't realize it. I didn't realize it until I went through that experience. I didn't even know what a near-death experience was. Again, I knew nothing about near-death experiences.
Yeah.
Nothing whatsoever. It was 1994. People didn't talk about it. I was afraid to talk about it even after I came back. I wouldn't talk about it for a while to people. But then I went to my doctor. But I'll tell you that third part here. Oren comes in. We're going. Now, a lot of people call this Akasha records. And near-death experiences, you hear people talking about Akasha records all the time. The way it was explained to me, like it was a big hall we go into, so he called it the Hall of Events. And when we got there, this was amazing. It was like a beautiful, gigantic crystal hall. It was reflecting light of the universe. It was magnificently beautiful. And now it felt almost like I was, only way to explain it, I used to explain it in the old days like a flickering reel on a movie screen, but now I explain it like the computer. You know when the computer goes blinking, it's moving 1,000 miles an hour so fast? That's what it felt like. So they would take me in the Hall of Events. It started moving in time. Now this wasn't for me, my personal life. This is for the world's personal life and everything that happens around, you know, someone or everyone, basically the whole world. So this is events, special events. They took me back to wars I've never was in. I mean, it was either World War II or Korea. This was before I was born. Or was I in them? That's what I have to ask now, because I don't know if I was or not. But those wars was before I was born. They took me right up into the next part they stopped at was, I think it was 1963 when JFK had been shot in Dallas, Texas, the assassination of JFK. And then it started flickering again, faster and faster and faster. I remember before it flickered, I remember how it happened. I was sitting in my classroom and the principal came over the loudspeaker. They used to have these speakers on the wall where the principal used to talk to the classes. And they said he's letting all the schools out early. So he let us out real early that day, that afternoon. And, you know, I went straight home. My mother and Christine, the lady we had working for us, was sitting on the table crying. Usually, every time I went home, my mother and Christine was singing. And, you know, both of them were professional singers. My mother, you know, she had a chance to sing with the Tommy Dorsey Band, the big bands. I don't know if you ever heard of them, Gina, because of your age. But in the 30s, they had these big bands that were really popular. And Tommy Dorsey was one of the biggest bands in the country. And my mother had a chance to sing with them. And Christina sounded like Diana Ross, the lady sings the blues. It was beautiful. It was magnificent. But that day they were crying on the table. And they said, did you hear? I said, yes, I heard that JFK got shot. And then we went back into the real again, I'll call it. And it's just moving and moving and we're moving. We see the killings. I see the killings of all the brothers. I see the killings of Martin Luther King. I see the killings of Bobby. I see the end of Vietnam. And then it takes me up past. It takes me right past my near-death experience. And then I see myself dying in the near-death experience. And then it's moving again. And it's faster and flickering faster and faster. And now it stops at 9/11. Now, I'm from New York. I had a lot of friends working in those buildings. So this was very, very emotional for me. When that stopped at 9/11, now I'm with Oren and Peter, and I think Antonio was there too, but I'm with Oren and Peter, and there's so much clouds and dust and everything and debris just falling all over the place. But I get frantic. I said, my friends are in that building, and I start to run. And they stop me from running, and they say, Bill, what do you feel? Do you feel this debris? I say, I don't feel anything, Oren. He says, what do you see? Don't forget, there was black smoke. The people running through black smoke. I say, Oren, I see everything. And he said, Bill, that's because you're not here. I didn't understand that part at all, you know. I thought it was might have been happening then. I had no idea what it was. But he says, that's because you're not here. This is your future events. These are things that happen in the future. And then we went in the reel again, and it went faster and faster and faster. And then we stop once again. Now we're stopping at a place where bombs are going off. And people are running again. Instinctively, I start to run, and they stop me, Bill, this can't hurt you. Evidently, you still have that acknowledgement of being hurt. The only time you see yourself in full body is in the life review and the hall of events. The other times, you're completely in spirit form. So the way I knew, I thought it was Baghdad. This must have been 2002, was the way that people were dressed, you know, with the turbans and how they dress over there. And I'm assuming that now. I try to go to help the people. I said, Bill, you can't help anybody. Right. From there, it takes me, Gina, to what I believe is these times today. And there's a very important message I want to give to people today. It's a very scary time in our world. People have hatred in them when they should have love in them. This is a time we're supposed to be ascending. Well, there are a lot of people ascending, but there are many, many people that are not ascending. And what's happening here is people have to understand we're in a completely different realm of time now that hasn't happened for over 200 years. The last time we were in this time frame was in the 1700s, and major things happened in those years. It was the first president of the United States, George Washington. It was many, many things were done in those 20 or 30 years. But we're in that time frame now of Aquarius. And what happens is we're supposed to be ascending to a fifth dimension. And there's a lot of people that are not ascending to that. There's too, because there's too much hate instead of love. There should be love, not hate. And the thing is, I know the outcome of this because they showed me the outcome of this. Okay, but you have to understand, our spirits grow through a relentless process of choice in our lives. Every time we make the right choices in our life, our spirit grows. Mm-hmm. And it grows and grows and grows. And that's how I think we hit a level of ascension where at some day we don't come back anymore. But I believe in incarnation. I know we've been back over and over and over again. I believe Oren was thousands and thousands and thousands of years old. His mind was beyond. I think we use 100% of our minds on the other side in heaven too. It's completely different than here. It's only love and service and kindness that we feel over there. We come here to learn. We come here to feel that sadness. We come here to feel pain. We come here to feel happiness. Although we're happy over there, it's a different kind of happy. It's 100 times better.
So you recognize Peter, obviously, because your brother. Did you get to see what Orin looked like?
I got to see exactly what Orin looked like in his spirit. Okay. You don't understand. I saw his spirit. The only time I seen him in real life as an elderly gentleman.
Okay.
And he's the only one of us that looked elderly out of the three of us.
Okay.
At the time.
That's
why I'm assuming he was tens of thousands of years old. This yeah. world hasn't been around one time. This world has been around more than one time, mm-hmm. over and over again. And prior to what's happened over in Turkey this last year, where they found that dig that's over 15,000 years old, with great, I mean, people with knowledge built that. I mean, they weren't throwing old bricks and stones at each other. They had knowledge to build those things. How do you explain Petra, what's in the, how do you explain that thing that's carved out in the middle of a desert? And, I mean, that thing was cut with a laser. There's magnificent things that have happened in the past here, maybe another realms, another world. But let's get back to the choices part, because this is important, because I'll tell you about the future and what they showed me.
Okay.
Okay, now the choices we make in life, they showed me these choices that I've made. They showed me outcomes. Well, in one choice, there could be seven different outcomes depending on the way you make the choice. Mm-hmm. So your choice not only has to be right, it has to be in alignment with the light. So we want to keep ourselves in that alignment, number one. Number two, we have to love and not hate. I know this is a hard thing to understand for a lot of people, but it's very important that they get there, because it will determine where their outcome will bring them. They showed me outcomes of the world. We could possibly be heading for a very, very bad, dark, dark, dark time. I mean, it could be as bad as the explain it in my book is the movie Mad Max, where people literally kill each other for water or food. And then on the other coin, it depends on the realm we're on of choices again. It could be, and it's people think it's up to only certain people. It's not up to certain people. It's up to everyone. Everyone has this ability to make choices, and they have to make the right ones. So they showed me on one choice how it could have seven different avenues. But the two outcomes that they showed me on what will happen in the future was only two possible outcomes. One was the bad one I just explained to you, and one was the one that, well, basically, it's beautiful. It's like a utopia here on Earth. That's if we all ascend to our next level of ascension. Like I said, which we all should be in by now, and we're not. So something has to happen. and, you know, to bring us to that realm. And I believe that I want to give your viewers some good news. I believe that we're all going to be fine. I believe that we're going to be, everything is going to be right again, because the good in the realms always outweigh the bad. Mm-hmm. The negativity is slow, low. The negative force is strong here on Earth, but on the other side, it's so low. The light overwhelms them by millennia.
Yeah.
It's so strong. And I'm not telling you that people have to die to get to this. I'm telling you that we can live in this on Earth. The final thing of my near-death experience is where they took me in front of the panel of great angels, I call this. This is when all beams of white light. White light is all the colors in the world in one light. Now, these beams of pure white love, knowledge, and wisdom gave me answers to things to bring us all to this realm. They showed me nine principles, nine wonderful principles, principles with simplicity in them. They are not hard to follow. There's nine wonderful principles. I am going to get to some of them in a minute, but I want to explain what happened prior to that. When they first brought me up to the level of the, I call it a panel of great angels, one angel had come right basically into me, and he's showing me these lines of numbers flowing down, these crystal numbers lighting up, lighting up, lighting up, these numbers like ones and eights and threes and sixes and nines. These numbers are the ones that are mainly lighting up. Then elements are lighting up. I don't know science that well, so I don't know all the elements, but they're having the streams of light going down in panels, in walls, and bright, 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 the numbers with light. Now, these numbers they showed me, the ones and the eights, these numbers are important. The one represents God. In the Christian Bible, one is God, and the eight represents eternity. Now, I'll show you how close religions are. That's why there really is no difference. In the core of all religions, if you really read into the religion itself, the core of the religion is love. And Jesus preached love. So, you know, sometimes I get in a little arguments with some people that throw fire and brimstone, because Jesus was all love. And the way the Buddhists teach things, they have, the Buddhists have 108 beads on their string of the beads for their prayers. So they say 108 prayers. Now this 108 is going to come up in sequence a lot. It's not the zero that's important. It's the prime number. It's the one and the eight. So the one and the eight equals nine. The three and the six are the bottom of the pyramid. The pyramid, it showed me, with bright light on top. Nine is the strongest number in the universe. Now, the way the Hindus and Buddhists have this number, the Hindus have it in their steeples. They have 108 steeples in their churches. They recite 108 mantras. I was talking to this guru as of late, just a couple of days ago, that explained to me that there's 114 now, but the base core is 108. Now, how they knew that in Hinduism and Buddhism, I have no idea. But these are angel numbers. Tesla knew the 369. Well, Tesla had more than one near-death experience. I believe he either had several out-of-body experiences, because he was always playing with electricity. or he had physical near-death experiences. And I believe that that's where his information came from, the 369. The 369, I'm going to give you a little information about now.
Great.
On the 1 and the 8, these are important because this is a core numbers. The 3 is one quarter of the pyramid. The 6 is the bottom quarter, and the 3, the 6, the 9 on top. Remember, so that's the look of it. Everything in our universe has a measurement behind it. We are sitting in position where without these numbers, our world would not exist. We would have no seasons. We would have no tides. The world itself that we live on, our beautiful Mother Earth, would seek to exist. And if you take, for example, take the sun, for example, the diameter of the sun is 864,000 miles across. And it's something like 93 some odd million miles. But when you get the exact numbers or very close to it, you divide the 864,000 into the 93 million and you get 108. These are the same numbers that are on the Buddhist prayer beads, in the Hindu temples. It's the same mantras they sound off. So it gets more interesting than that. You take the moon diameter across is 2160 some odd miles across on the moon. And it's 233,000 miles something to Earth. When you divide the smaller number into the bigger number, once again, you get 108. The radius of the moon itself is 108. The sun is 108 times the size of Earth. So how did the Hindus and the Buddhists and the Christians know these numbers?
I don't know, but I love it. I love it.
It's interesting when it comes to that.
And you know, Jesus died at 33 years old, and we have 33 vertebrae in our body.
That's right.
I mean,
and my life path number is 3. What's yours?
9.
9. So you have a very strong life path number. Your life path number is extremely, extremely powerful.
Yeah, because
and mine represents the Holy Trinity.
Oh, yeah. And in 9,
that's what I was told when I was there.
In 9, you have to have, there's a different experience for every number.
Right.
And with 9, you've had to go through all those experiences to
it
get.
It goes by your birthday now to figure it out. So for the people that don't know, they can go online and figure out what their life path number is. So we ought to let people know that. Now, the last thing that happened was they explained these 9 principles of enlightenment to me. And the 9 principles, they remain supreme, but they're simplistic. Mm-hmm. There's nothing hard about them. There's a few that are very close to our Bible principles, like the first one, taking of a life. Mm-hmm. That's something we shouldn't be even thinking of doing. And the way it was explained to me was much different than how we think about it here when we're in our earthly body. If we take a person's life before it's time, that means it's his or her life path was not completed. Mm-hmm. Now, we have no idea if this person might have had a child and their great-great-grandchild or their great-grandchild might have came up with the real cure for cancer without having to wait for stage 4 and to begin with. These things are starting to happen now, so I better come up with a new disease to explain it. but the, you know, because they do have the cure for a lot of cancers. You could cure cancers nowadays with build your own blood cells up. They build them up in a lab if you catch it in an early stage. And they re-inject you with your own blood. And
it
kills off the cancer cells. It's wonderful.
Yeah, so, my doctor does that. He actually did that for COVID. He didn't do the fact he got in trouble for it, but he didn't do the vaccines. He took the little bit of the COVID and he took the person's blood and he made their own plasma and he shot it back into them. Yep. And they got a super immune system now. And they're studying his patient and they actually shut down his office.
Really?
He didn't go to court.
They shut down his office.
Yes. And he's trying to get it back now. It was a really big mess. And yeah, it was terrible. But now the cedar-sinai has taken his patients that he did that to. And they're just amazed because they all have a super immunity. They didn't need the vaccine. It's, you know, the jab.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But same thing that you're talking about. There's absolutely.
I'm going to tell your viewers a few other things and then they could look into my. The number two principle is they've already been showing me all my principles through the whole thing. This is the most amazing thing. I've already explained the principles to you, but you're not going to realize till I show them out. The number two principle is the principle of intuition. Mm-hmm. Your intuition is so important for you to pay attention because that's your guides trying to speak to you and put you on the right direction. And they're with us our whole life. Sometimes we have to ask for a strong intuition if we don't get it normally. Like I've always had it my whole life. I've had, they gave me an alert system on when they showed me, told me my life path number was. They told me what my, I didn't know what a life path number was. I didn't know anything about this. Like I said, I was a business person. I was getting ready to come home and getting ready to go to QVC to show them some new stuff I made up in China and all that, a new watch. And I made an angel watch with crystals floating around it. And, you know, I was about ready to, I was all excited about that. And wasn't even thinking about anything. And I had no awareness whatsoever of what a near-death experience was. So intuition, but you understand it. The people have to understand this. If they get the book down the line, there's 5 or 6 pages that just explain the intuition side. There's different ladders of intuition. There's 9 ladders on the last one. The last one is Mother Earth. There's 9 ladders about love. And it brings you up into an amazing, beautiful realm. So these 9 principles are so important to learn. So one's intuition, there's choices. And like I said, there's pages. So we can't stay here all night and explain these. But it's important that they understand how to do this. Because you could actually take what the brilliant thing is on the first part of my book. That's so important was the things that happened to me in my life. Like my wife and I one time were kidnapped in Thailand and almost killed. But other than a miracle to get us out of it, which it was a miracle, we're alive today. I mean, things that happened to me in my life. I told you one earlier about Howard Hughes' lawyer I met. Mm-hmm. But if people get the chance to read the book, they'll get all that information. And then you could put all your living intimation into the other side. It's wonderful. It just puts it all together as a whole, and you understand what life is about for the first time. Once you learn the 9 principles, you'll understand how to bring that into your normal life and get answers as you're going along. We just have to pay attention to our intuition, our choices now. Remember the planes I talked about, the planes of decisions we make about choice. Mm-hmm. So you get it on the right intuition from your guide, but you make a choice of something else to do. Well, now you're opening a whole different realm on the other side. And they show you these realms. They're like in layers. It's amazing. It's so advanced. It's incredible. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. And all you feel this amazing love like you could never explain. That's why I would never be afraid of fear of death anymore. Yeah. I lost it from that date. Prior to my near-death experience, I had a fear of death, but no longer. You know,
no.
I know someday I'll go home again, and that'll be my time to go. But here, I'm supposed to do what I'm doing now. And you know, there's principles about love. There's principles about trying to keep yourself in somewhat of a decent condition, because we have to try to keep our body in fairly good health, mm-hmm. because this is our vessel that we use. This is just a temporary abode. This is not us. We're star people. We come from the light. Mm. So it's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Oh my gosh. I love talking to you. I love your story. I watched a couple different podcasts with you on it, and I just cried. I felt like I knew you, and that's why I reached out to you. But I really did. I thought about you, your experience the whole night, and about you being a paramedic. And you know, I'm curious a couple different things really quickly.
Before you get into the questions,
yeah, okay.
Just let me finish it out. There's one thing that's important. Okay. The angel that showed me my life path, the three, also gave me my alert system, which was 6-6. Now, I didn't have to think about that because I knew that number my whole life. That 66 has brought me, and I knew it was an alert system. I knew it because every time I would see in sequence during the day, 6-6, or sometimes 3 days in a row, 6-6 would pop up. Every time I looked up, 6-6 was there. Like I'd be driving, and all of a sudden, I'm at exit 66. I look down at the speedometer. I'm going exactly 66. I look at my watch. It's 6 past 6. And it happens in sequence like that. That's them explaining to me that something's about to happen. Well, it doesn't have to be bad. It could be good or bad. It's just that something big in your life is about to happen. So everybody has that as well. Hmm. It's an alert system to put us down and keep us on the right path. Okay? So we have this. The last thing that happened to me, a beautiful young spirit approaches me. Hmm. And she says to me, now, don't forget, I'm in heaven. I'm in full joy. I'm in spirit. I'm in love. I just got all this wisdom from all these beautiful angels. She says, you have to return. Hmm. At this point, you don't think about the other side, which is here now. At this point, you are home, family in abundance, friends that you've been traveling with for thousands of years. I mean, because we travel in spirit circles. She says, you must return. She says, you have the understanding of the nine principles. Yes? I said, yes. She says, you must return. I did everything. I remember this. I did everything to try to stay. If I had a body, I would have been kicking and scraping to stay. No kidding. And at her final time telling me this, she said, Dad, you must return. Now, I didn't know what she meant by that. When she said, Dad, you must return, I had no idea what she meant, because at that time it flashed that my wife was pregnant at home and I was going to become a dad for the second time. I already had my oldest son, Joey, but my middle son, Billy, was in my wife's belly at home. That's why she didn't come with me to the show this time. This was the only time she wasn't with me at the show working it. And I just assumed it was that. She said, Dad, you must return. I am 6 of 6. I had no idea what that meant. And all of a sudden, boom, I'm taken back in like a vortex. And I'm like almost like a rag doll. It's not as pleasing as going. And as I approach my human body again, I remember starting to feel pain set in. And next thing I know, I'm in the body and nothing moves. All of a sudden, nothing in my body moved. I opened my eyes. I didn't take my first breath yet. The only thing that moved in my body was my throat. So I took a breath in, you know, like when you, if you were underwater for a long time and couldn't breathe, and you get up and say, you take every bit of air you possibly could get in. That's what happened. And then I'm laying there completely with no feeling in my arms or legs. Just my throat moved. and I could breathe. Well, I said to myself, I could breathe. Hopefully, and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. I just had this experience that it was totally unbelievable. Finally, after about 10 minutes or so, you know how when you fall asleep on your arm or leg, it gets dead? Mm. You understand that? You've had that happen to you before?
Yes.
Well, I got the tingles all over my body. The feeling came back. I reached over to the phone. I said, get one of my helpers or someone here to help me. I had three people with me at work, so they must have called one of them up because I passed out again. I wound up in the hospital and opened my eyes in there. And that was it. But
oh yeah.
The last thing, I'm sorry, but I got to get this out.
Okay.
In the year 2000, the sixth month, on the sixth day, June the 6th of 2000, my daughter was born.
Oh, my gosh. And what the six of six? Did you have six children?
No. No, oh. I have three children.
Oh, okay.
I have three children. The six of six. The six was just my alert sign. I mean, okay. I've had that my whole life. I recognized that even before my near-death experience. I knew that six of six meant something, 66. But when she said to me, before they sent me back, I'm six of six, and I begged and pleaded to stay there. She said to me, I am six of six. And then she was born on June the 6th.
Wow.
Six months and the sixth day in 2000 with no years behind. Just zeros.
Unbelievable. So the book is The Ninth Level of Enlightenment, The Wisdom of Light.
Ninth Level of Enlightenment, The Wisdom of the Light. That's the book.
BillTortorella.com. And
BillTortorella.com and BillTortorella@gmail.com.
Okay, and we're going to link everything below. So I guess
I'm in Facebook.
Yep.
And also Instagram.
Okay, great. I'll definitely.
My name.
You'll be able to find everything below. But okay, so why do you think? Do you have any understanding of why this kind of came to you or happened to you just so you could share the message? Or is there any, like, why do you think you were kind of chosen to have this at NDE and experience?
So I was sent back to be a messenger.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why I'm here.
Yeah.
They explained that to me on the other side. They said, you understand the nine principles of enlightenment. It was for these times. We're in a time where we have to understand these principles. It will help us ascend much faster. People just have to apply them. And they're so simple. They just have to apply them. That's it.
Yeah. I'm a loss for words. I just love your story. I love your energy, your spirit, and your whole journey.
It was amazing. It was so profound. I remember it. It's 30 years ago, and I remember it like it was yesterday still. 30 years has passed, and I remember, like, I could see it. I remember feeling the love.
Yeah.
The love's impossible to explain because it's a different love than we feel here.
I love that. That's a great point.
Yeah. Well, it's stronger and better. We are all love.
That all happened before you even got to the hospital, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
He wasn't even in the hospital.
Yeah. No, if I was in the hospital, they would have hit me with defibrillators. I wouldn't have had that. Because you get people that have NDEs all the time. They hit them with defibrillators. And all they did was float above their body.
Yeah.
That's all they did. Some people got the chance to see a little bit, like, around. Some people fly away a little bit, and then they pull them back. I had a friend. He went through the windshield. His car hit again. He didn't go through the windshield. He hit the windshield, totally knocked him out cold, broke something in the tip of his skull. And he hopped out of his body. He was driving his truck. He's sitting alongside his body, watching the paramedics pull him out, put him down on the ground and hit him with the defibrillators. Mm-hmm. They hit him three times. He jumped back in his body.
Yeah.
And that's how he explained it to me.
So you saw 9/11. Did you know the date or you just saw the energy?
No, I had no idea.
You didn't know when it was coming. So when it came.
Prior to that, that's when I knew everything was real too. Don't forget. because I went from my near-death experience, they showed me, right to 9/11. So yeah. I had no idea what I saw.
Yeah, until
it
happened.
I knew it was 9/11 now because yeah. we've seen it happen. But I had no idea before that. I just had that experience. Then I went to my doctor after all this was over, my own personal doctor. I went home, went right to the doctor. I said, Dr. Mosa, he's been my doctor for over 20 years already, since I was a young paramedic. I said, can you check me out? He said, why? He said, you were here 4 months ago. You're not ready for another 2 months. He says, you're not feeling well? I said, I'm fine now. This is after I got better from whatever sickness it was, right?
Yeah.
So he takes me in the room, takes, you know, just does a stethoscope, takes my blood pressure, says, you're all fine. And then I says, can I talk to you, Dr. Mosa? He brings me back to his office. He said, what's up? We were like friends at this point. We knew each other for a long time. He said, Bill, what's the matter? And I just opened up to him. He's the first person I told. I opened up to him and told him everything. He says, okay, hold on. He took me by the hand. He says, you got to go back in the examining room for something. He hooks the electrocardiogram up to me. And he, in the old days, it was the sheets. You know, they used to come out and he's reading them like this. And he's looking at one thing on him over and over again. He's looking, and he looks up at me and he says, Bill, when did you have your heart attack? I said, Dr. Mosley, you know I never had a heart attack. You've been my doctor my whole life. He said, I know. I never had this on your sheet before. But there's something in the EKGs that show your heart had some kind of disturbance in it. He mm-hmm. said, your heart wasn't working, it looks like to me. And then he said to me, after I explained the whole thing, he brought me back in again. He said, Bill, you had what they call a near-death experience.
Yeah.
I was so relieved to find out that there was other people. Because in 1994, the people didn't talk about it like they talk about it today.
No.
There's yeah. other people this actually happened to. He says, I have 7 of my patients that told me the exact same story you told me.
Yeah.
But most of the ones that told them the exact same story didn't die in the hospital. They either died in the house or on the way to the hospital in the ambulance.
When you were experiencing the negative emotions with your life review.
Oh God. Yeah.
Did you,
hell, if you want to tell what hell is.
Well, were you experiencing it from the other person's perspective? Like how it felt to be them, or were you experiencing?
I was experiencing it from the other person's perspective. I was feeling their exact pain. I physically became the pain.
Yes, Kate, because I've heard that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
I mean, that's how bad it was. It's not only so you don't only, you physically felt everything. Remember, I told you that's the only time I saw myself with, I was still in my life review, but I actually saw myself in my body.
Yeah.
And I felt it. They let you feel it.
Yes.
They let you feel this pain you put upon someone else.
Even the smallest thing, I heard another NDA where the lady was saying, she had like had a little baby kitten and she was a little kid and she like pulled the kitten's tail as a kid. And and she even saw that, you know what I mean? And how it felt for that cat, how that cat was scared, you know? And I mean, it's little things. So, I mean, that's why I love these conversations, because if we're just that, our intuition and awareness and we understand this, we really can walk around with a little bit more kid gloves with people, because we understand that we have the power to transform, you know, the people's days or everything around us by this knowledge and information that we're sharing right now. So I find it so valuable.
No, you know? The whole idea is to get the information out. And that's what I do. I do talks. I do shows. I just did a documentary. Film. It's going to be out in the summer, next summer sometime.
Well, it's been really great to hear your story and your journey. And
Thank you, Gina.
We're going to link everything below so we can find Bill Tortorella. Oh my God.
BillTortorella.com.
Isn't he just beautiful? He just captured my soul when I'm seeing his spirit. So the 9th level of enlightenment, the wisdom of the light.
Yeah.
If you have questions about what these 9 things are and you really want to work on it, this is an easy way to do that pretty easy and quickly. This has been The Liberated Healer.
Yeah, the book's not a long read if people want to get it, you know. The book's not a long read at all. And it really explains out the principles, because you got to explain them all out. And like I said, there are some of them about 7-8 pages long each. So it's a little understanding, but it's simplicity. When they understand it and they read it, they will understand it. It's nothing that is going to put them. I don't talk about vibrations, even though we all become pure energy. I don't want to confuse people, you know? So I try to keep it like I would understand it.
So when you do have to go back, I mean, it's going to be like probably a quicker trip for you this, you know.
Someday, go back home. That's all.
Well, I can't wait to meet you here, there, or anywhere. You're amazing. And,
Well, thank you.
I just want to say thank you to everybody who likes, share, and subscribes and helps support the channel. I really appreciate it. It lets us continue to do these talks and provide information for you to hopefully help you grow or entertain you or whichever. But thank you so much.
All right. And remember, BillTortorella@gmail.com. If someone wants to email me, they can.
Okay, then.
All right.
Thank you so much. That's how I found you. Bye.
That's for sure.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can find us online at theliberatedhealer.com, on Instagram at Liberated Healer Podcast, or on Facebook at The Liberated Healer. Give us a follow, subscribe, send us a message if you so feel, and thank you for your support. Podcast.